is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 95, everyone, operating on September 20th, 2021. This is Drew and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Doug. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Doug, congratulations on surviving the puppy mill, or the guppy mill, as one of your fellow trainees call it. I thought that was so funny. Congratulations on becoming a 737 pilot. You've got the certificate, you got the checklist, you got the uniform, but when do you actually fly the guppy, the 737?
Yeah. Let's go back to this guppy mill thing. Someone was making a comment because one of my classmates finished a couple weeks ahead of me. Mm-hmm. My classmates from Indoc, and he made a comment about, yeah, I'm sitting at home still waiting to go on my, we call it OE, operational experience, which is the trip that you have to do with a line check airman.
Yeah.
25 hours, two landings, usually spread out over one or two trips, which is like the final qualification. So technically I'm qualified to fly the 737, but until I do this OE trip or two, mm-hmm. I have to fly with an evaluator essentially. Okay. And then once I get signed off, then I can fly with any captain.
And that's how many flights? Just one? Or
it's 25 total hours and at least two landings. And it usually ends up getting spread out over two trips. Okay. Sometimes it can be done in one. It might be a week or two now, it sounds like, before I fly. But going back to this puppy mill thing, someone on our group text made the comment about, man, they're really backed up right now. And someone else said, well, yeah, at the schoolhouse right now is like a puppy mill because they're just pumping us through.
And then
someone else said that. And then someone stepped in and said puppy mill. No, I think you mean guppy mill.
Guppy mill.
That was because the 737 is called the guppy. Yeah.
Right. You sent me that and I'm like, okay, I am stealing that effective immediately.
Oh, absolutely. And I told the group, I said, I'm forever calling my time at the training center my time at the guppy mill.
That's what it is. Years from now, they'll be calling it that.
Yeah.
No, but you made it through the guppy mill. I mean, the evaluation was actually a lot easier than you expected.
It was the easiest evaluation that I've had in my flying career, which it, from what I understand, is how it's supposed to be. The way that the training is built, it's right. Basically, are you safe? Can you follow checklist? Can you go gate to gate?
Yeah, there shouldn't be surprises.
No. We're only in the air for like 45 minutes. We're going from Houston to Dallas and it was gate to gate. So it started out, we showed up at the airplane, ran all the checklist, flew a normal flight. They threw a couple of abnormals at us, but no, aside from that, it was just a normal 45 minute hub to hub type, you know, major city to major city. Yeah. Landed, went to the gate. And the nice thing was I wasn't in there. Well, this sounds bad. The nice thing was I was with a seat fill captain for the evaluation. So all the other sim events, I was with my sim partner, who's another FO. Mm-hmm. And he and I were split up. He went first and then I went second, and we had an actual captain in the seat. So they were running the captain duties. So Scott and I didn't have to pretend like we were the captain, okay. Which like he and I worked really well together, but neither of us are 737 captains. Okay. So we had to kind of fake through some of the captains.
So you had to act like you had to proceed. Like you were the captain?
You had to act like you were the captain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's crazy. But you're going to be an FO. Isn't that?
Yeah, it's just because I was paired with another FO, so I couldn't be in the FO seat the entire time for all the sims. So we just split the time, which is, okay. It's good and bad. It only gave me half the time in the right seat, which is where I'll actually be flying. But at the same time, it gave me an appreciation for what the captain does. It helped me learn what the captain does, what they say, so that when I'm on the line, I know exactly what they're going to say next, because I kind of had to prep for that and study for that.
So, Doug, I've heard of people going to captain school. Mm-hmm. What do you think is in that class?
It's the same thing.
But like additional things on being
the leader. Yeah.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, more like managerial type stuff.
Yeah, it's the same training program. So it'll be the same length. When I go to the 777, I'll be going through FO stuff. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll be paired with an upgrading captain so I can spend the entire time in the right seat. And then I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years from now, when I decide to upgrade to captain, if I go back to the guppy.
Yeah,
it'll be the same thing, a 5-week, 6-week, 20 sim training course where I'm in the left seat. going through all the captain duties.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. That makes sense. You have to have a familiarization with what they do.
Yeah. So I'm checking my schedule because my October bid. So even though I still have to do my OE trip, I had to put in my bid for my October schedule because I'm hopefully going to be flying the line in October when I'm done with OE, and right. The schedules are starting to come out right now for the other fleets. The 7-3 hasn't been released yet. And so I'm checking like every couple of hours, refreshing just to see if I have a schedule yet.
So how quickly, so the class before you, how quickly were they given a schedule?
Well, the schedule only gets released in a small block every month. It's the first to middle part of the month. It has to be released by, I remember the date, like the 17th or 18th or something. Okay. So it's not based on when I finished. It's just based on I'm done. And so I'm eligible for an October schedule.
Okay. And how do you receive this? Do you get an email or a phone call?
No, we have a communication system that we log into, and it's just a message that says you have your schedule, and then you can go in your calendar, see what days you're flying, see where your layovers are, see the flights you're flying, etc.
How exciting. So I know. That's going to be your first flight, whatever
system
they send you. But would you get an alert so you don't miss it?
No, because you know to look it up, and we get the schedule. It's for the October schedule, which starts, I think, at the end, like the last day of September or something like that.
Right.
So if I don't look for a week, it doesn't really matter because I'm not actually starting that schedule until the end of this month.
Yeah. I hope it'll be San Francisco to Chicago to Myrtle Beach. Wouldn't that be great? It's a sign.
Oh man.
All right. Anything else on it?
No. How was your week? I understand that some Hawaii bound passengers were surprised by their menu options.
They were, but before we get to that, I had a surprise visit or I knew it was going to happen, but your dad visited the DC area.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep. So he was in town all week. We had dinner together in Washington, DC, or as we call it, Reston, Virginia.
Okay.
Which is the airport. Yeah. So no, it was really nice seeing your dad. And we spent a lot of time talking about his trips. Dale, if you're listening, great stories. He's taken some really great trips to Asia on EVA Air, and they're planning a trip on Korean. So
he's
got them all lined up for next year.
Pretty bummed about that Korean trip, though.
It downgraded, right?
Yeah.
It was an A380, and he showed me it's a 777.
It's a 777 now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like March or something next year. It'll probably change two more times.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going over there, and then they're doing a repositioning cruise from, I think it leaves from Korea, Japan, leaves from Japan. And the boat, which will have been doing Asian cruises during the winter and spring, repositioning over to the US for the spring and summer cruise season. So they're going to ride the cruise ship all the way across the Pacific.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dale is living the life we want to live like today. So that's awesome. No, it was great talking to him. And Dale, if you're listening, thanks for listening and great time with you. But no, you were talking about our customers going to Hawaii. No, I talked about, they're going to be confused. These Hawaiians are going to be confused when they get schnitzel and strudel on a flight to Honolulu.
Yeah.
So let me explain. Honolulu is on a 767-400. It has GE CF6 engines, which Greg, if you're listening, I hope you appreciate that I noticed that. I wasn't even sure that they weren't the same. So that plane went on maintenance. It needed a new EEC. Do you know what that stands for? I mean, for us, I know it is engine electronic control. Does that sound
familiar? That. Okay. Yeah, no, I guess.
That's something. There's
multiple acronyms thrown. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thrown around.
I don't know if it's just Boeing's or GE engines that have. I think all of them have it. It's an engine electronic control.
Yeah, 7-3 has it.
7-3 has it. Okay. Mm-hmm. They probably all have it. But anyway, they ran the engine to check the EEC. It wasn't functioning right. Need a new EEC. We don't have it in stock. The closest one is in Newark, and you can't just get it in an hour, right? You have to wait for a flight that leaves and stuff. And this is going to Honolulu, Doug. Honolulu from DC is about 9 hours, which means the crew does not have a lot of legality time. So it's like, okay, what do we do? So I'm asking my gate manager, what 67s do we have on the field? We happen to have three others, and one of them is not routed for a couple of days, but it's a 767-300. My first question was, can we take an EEC from one of these three, just pop it in, right? Lock and load or plug and play? No, you can't, because The 300s use Pratt & Whitney 4000 engines.
So it's a different component.
Right. So no go on that. So it's like, all right, the passenger load was such that they would all fit on the 767-300. So that's good. What do you think takes the longest time during a plane change? Is it bag loading? Is it changing the passenger seats? What do you think takes the longest time?
Probably the passenger seats, because you're going from a 400 to a 300. And so you right. have to figure out, okay, did someone pay for a window? Did someone pay for business class, et cetera? And families sitting together, singles. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that takes some time. But surprisingly, it does not take that much time because the computer does it all.
Okay.
Gives them similar seats.
Can and this another guess?
What?
Catering.
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 Right. And we'll come back to the schnitzel and strudel. For this, we went from a 400 to a 300, but the plane that we were going to had more premium seats.
Oh, nice.
So if anything, you more got upgrades. A better seat.
Yeah.
Right. So if your seat was in the extra legroom seats, your seat may now have been in this new cabin, which is a premium economy. Mm-hmm. So you may have lucked out. So that wasn't a problem. So then I go to catering. It's like, all right, how long to change the catering? You're not going to believe this, Doug. You would think 67 to 67, easy. 4 hours. I'm like, we don't have 4 hours with the legality.
Is it because of like different storage or what?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So different galleys. So all the trays, individual trays would have to come out, go into individual carts.
Yeah.
It's probably like 40 to 50 carts of meals. And because now we serve meals on these flights. I'm like, no, we don't have 4 hours. Okay. So what about snack boxes? How quickly can you get me snack boxes? And they said, yeah, we could make those in about an hour and a half. I'm like, okay. So then I'm thinking we'll have customer service give out meal vouchers so that people can get a nice meal, mm-hmm. a regular meal at the airport. And then we'll still have a snack on board, you know, for a 9-hour flight. But then I'm also thinking that's not the best product to offer on board. So, and we've done this before. It's now about lunchtime, right? They're making the galleys for our European flights.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Gate Gourmet, I asked our catering, what is the galley that you have almost done for the European 767s? And they said, oh, let me check. So they came back and said, the Zurich galley is just about done. I'm like, bingo.
We'll take it.
Yeah. We'll take it. So I told my guys, all right, change to 67, put in a 2-hour delay. We're going to get the Zurich galleys. They're going to bring them from the kitchen. They'll make new galleys for the Zurich flight.
Yeah. Right?
Then we're laughing because we're like talking about, well, what's going to happen? I mean, they're expecting rice and spam, and they're going to get strudel
and pretzels.
And pretzels, right?
Yeah. Well, wait, can I interrupt?
Yes.
We've said on a previous show that you and I both do the same thing. I think my dad talked about it when he was on the show.
Right.
We always try and go with the authentic option when we're going to a certain location.
Yeah, so you can get in that vibe.
Yeah, I picture someone, like you said, the rice and spam sitting on the plane, first time going to Hawaii, saying, oh, you know, right. I want to get the pork shoulder or
right. whatever. The teriyaki chicken or yeah. something Pacific.
It's right? like, no, sorry, we have schnitzel and noodles.
We got schnitzel.
Bratwurst and kraut.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, then we're laughing. I mean, we're probably taking this way too far because we're totally stereotyping, right? And then I'm like, all right, well, guys, what the flight attendants could do, they could take the menus, cross out the schnitzel and change it to pork tonkatsu, which is like an Asian deep fried pork, right? See if we pass that off. We got to take a timeout because I actually have the menus. The menus.
All right.
So I'll be right back. It's downstairs.
While you're getting the menu, I quickly have to mention something
yep.
that my dad sent me on his way to DC. He was in Atlanta. I think he was at the Sky Club.
Right.
And you were talking about catering and bins that go into the galley.
Yeah, he showed me a picture.
The picture of all the alcohol.
All those carts.
It was all booze. It was like preloaded beer, the little mini bottles of wine, things like that.
Yeah,
it had to have been hundreds, if not thousands, of bins of beer, wine, minis that spread to the winds.
Right.
I have never seen that. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah. You know, we're stereotyping what foods they're eating on these flights going to Switzerland.
Yeah.
Right. And we're stereotyping what they're eating with these Hawaiians. And they're not Hawaiian. Yeah. Maybe some of them are Polynesian background. They're mostly Americans. Yeah, they're
vacationers.
So I'm like, all right, let me not stereotype. Let me actually pull up the menus and see what they're actually serving on these flights. Right, Doug?
Yeah.
No, we're not serving schnitzel and strudel going to Zurich. Your choice is going to Europe. are a seared beef short rib with bordelaise sauce and mashed potatoes and root vegetables.
I mean, that's pretty good. That sounds kind of German.
Yeah, it sounds very European.
Like meat and potatoes. Meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, but Americans like it too. So you get a seared turbo, which is a fish, with a beurre blanc sauce, steamed wild and white rice, stir-fried bell pepper, carrot, and onion. See, that to me has an Asian theme to it. Mm-hmm. But it's going from D.C. to Europe. So,
yeah.
And then you have a choice of burrata ravioli with pomodoro sauce, basil pesto, and roasted tomatoes, which sounds Italian, but it's going to Zurich. So wipe out the stereotypes. I mean, you may have some things that are related to that culture, but don't.
That's true. I mean, Switzerland is a very eclectic mix of European flavors.
Well, you know, and it's so international right now, our airline. I've had chicken curry on a flight from San Francisco to DC, and that's not going to anywhere in Asia, right? All right, now going to Hawaii,
There
is a kind of an Asian bent to it. So this is what we're serving to Hawaii. The option one is a beef short rib. There's that short rib again, right? With Asian barbecue sauce, blanched broccolini, carrots, and jasmine rice. It's kind of an Asian twist to it.
Yeah.
So we weren't completely off.
No.
It's not spam, but
no, the rice, definitely.
Here's something else. And the other thing is a Thai chicken with coconut ginger sauce casserole, or a butternut squash ravioli with mascarpone sauce. So, well, yeah, I mean, the menu items are across the board.
There's no chicken orzo?
No chicken orzo, thank God.
That must have been an August menu.
No, because, I mean, if they're on a domestic flight, if they get chicken orzo to San Francisco and then chicken orzo to Honolulu, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be on Twitter.
Yeah.
Now, the other problem that we thought about later... Flight attendants were fine with it because now they're getting European, they're getting an international
meal.
Food product. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their second meal is going to be an omelet and it's going to be arriving in Honolulu.
In the afternoon. Yeah. Because they're getting the breakfast.
But who doesn't love a cheddar cheese omelet at any time of the day? So,
yeah. Yeah. Right? I've been to brunch at 2 o'clock and got an omelet. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. So, enough to talk about food. So, the flight did leave. The pilots actually had another 2 hours of legality time. But the flight attendants were illegal because we posted a 2 p.m. departure and they timed out at 1:45. But every single one of them waived legality to go.
Because they're going to Honolulu.
One would think.
Yeah.
I think so, right?
Yeah.
It's like, do you want to stay in D.C. or do you want to go to Honolulu? They also get a bonus for that. So like a little enticement.
Yeah.
But yeah, it went really well. And no. We don't serve schnitzel to Zurich and rice and spam to Honolulu.
Well, it sounds like you had another busy week as usual, and you're going to have another upset recovery coming up. By the time this episode airs on Monday, you and a few of our friends will have returned from Dorkfest, an annual spotters event at LAX. As I mentioned last week, I wish I could be there, but I could get called to fly at any moment. Drew, let's talk about your destination, LAX, and see how the airport is doing with traffic to Asia, Australia, and New Zealand still down. And I just want to mention, last episode, we said that it may air late. We were able to squeeze it in before you leave, because you leave tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow,
Yeah, tomorrow.
I've already checked in for my flight.
Awesome. Yeah, so we're able to squeeze this in so we can talk about the event next week. I know it's like this long, drawn-out tease of the event, but we can talk about it when you get back.
Yeah, exactly. Doug, we'll definitely miss you. But how cool would that be if you get a flight, if you get scheduled and LAX is in one of your routes? I mean, that's not far from that being a possibility, although it's coming up. So you're probably not going to get a schedule in the next couple of days. Right?
Yeah, well, and hopefully if I do get scheduled, it'll be after noon on Friday because my uniform is at the dry cleaners right now. Okay. Yeah, I have a backup option of a couple friends who work for the same airline that if they were to call me, I could
borrow theirs.
Call them in a pinch and say, can I borrow it? Yeah.
You're going to show up and they're going to be like, are you wearing your dad's suit? Doug, you and I flew through LAX on the way to Alaska in May, and I remember it being really busy. Let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the actual numbers for LAX. This is how they're doing. So this is from the Los Angeles Business Journal. LA airport traffic nears pre-pandemic levels. So for the first 6 months of 2021, nearly 18 million passengers flew from Los Angeles, a 58.3% drop from 2019 levels. Domestic and international travel have been on two different paths, Doug, as we know. Domestic passenger counts have been rising month by month. The 4.1 million domestic passenger tally in June was only 27.3% below pre-COVID June 2019. So overall, for the first 6 months, 15.3 million domestic travelers passed through Los Angeles, exactly half the pre-pandemic levels of 2019. Thanks to a 30% growth in passenger traffic using Los Angeles, Delta Airlines leapfrogged American to become the new top carrier by volume. United, Southwest, Alaska, those three rounded up out the top five. But Los Angeles continues to be plagued by a steep drop in international passengers. In June, 761,000 passengers went through the gates at LAX on their way to or back from international destinations. That was down 67.8% from June 2019. The six-month tally for the first half of 2021 showed 2.69 million passengers. That's a huge plunge, 78.5% from the first half of 2019.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing the math on this. So 761,000 passengers, assuming, let's call it 290, 300 people per flight, I guess. Okay. That's 1,300 roughly flights in the month, 1,300 okay. international flights in the month divided by 31 days. It's only 42 international flights a day.
Yeah, that's really low.
Which is very low for LA.
Yeah, and you know, the majority of their traffic, I mean, it's split between Europe and Asia, but it is mostly Asia, mm-hmm. Australia, and those countries still have quarantines and they're going through their, you know, crises right now.
So yeah, and Australia, I think, is still capping to what, 40 people per plane or something like that?
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
40 people per plane.
Per flight. Mm-hmm.
So you could have a 787 from LA, but you can only put 40 people on it.
I think it's 40. Yeah, it's definitely capped at a pretty small number. Well, yeah. Let's talk about cargo, because cargo has been a bright spot, especially for LA. Cargo tonnage numbers tells a different story. For the first 6 months of 2021, LAX cargo tonnage jumped 28.6% to 1.46 million tons compared to the same six pre-pandemic months of 2019. Chief executives of the Los Angeles World Airports, Justin Urbacci, said, "Last year, LAX was a key hub for personal protective equipment, helping to get these critical items to people around the globe." He said, "This year, LAX has become an important stop for vaccines en route to people throughout Southern California." Cargo, it's that bright spot.
It's that bright spot.
Yeah, if you remember when we were in LA for the pseudo Dork Fest last year, that was canceled and we still went, we saw tons of cargo only flights coming in and out. So while we weren't seeing the passenger flights, we were still seeing a lot of these Asian carriers come in and out.
Yeah, and you know, Doug, I'm even wondering, like, some of the passenger planes we saw landing, the Asian passenger planes with the windows, because you know, cargo planes don't have windows, I'm wondering if those were cargo flights, you know,
where they
fill up the bellies and the cabins with.
Yeah, I remember looking, because China Airlines had one of the days we were there had five arrivals and five departures within an hour of each other. And I think one of them was China Airlines flight 6 or something like that. And the others were like 2502 or, you know, like a cargo special. Yeah.
I mean, thank goodness for cargo. Number one, I mean, they're keeping business going pretty briskly at LAX. And more importantly, it's going to provide us more eye candy on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll have all these cargo planes to see.
Well, tell you what I'll do. I'm on not the arrival path, but most of the Asian flights that come over to LA fly just west of my house.
Yeah.
So on Saturday or Friday, while you guys are there too, I'll tell you what, I'll grab a beer. I'll grab a beer. I'll go sit out in the backyard. I'll watch the contrails. I'll watch on FR24 and I'll text you guys. Hey, guess what? This plane's coming in. Though I know you guys will already be looking.
Right. But you could be like, Jaman Airlines 787-8 incoming.
Yep. That way, at least I'll feel like I'm there with you guys, because I'm looking at the same planes that you're about to look at.
That's true. You could take a picture of it over Sacramento.
And yeah.
We could get it landing.
Yeah, exactly. Mine will just be smaller and grainier than you guys. real quickly before we move on, I just want to mention this international traffic that we talked about.
Yeah.
When I was flying home on Sunday night out of Denver, I was sitting in the club just watching all the traffic out on the ramp. Drew, there were, what did I say, two Lufthansa A350s, a BA 777, an Air France 78, an Icelandair 75, and a couple of United 78s all going to Europe. So there were seven or eight European flights that night.
That's high for Denver.
It is. That's actually better than pre-pandemic because yes. Air France just launched Denver service.
Okay. Air France 787. I have not seen one of those in person.
It looks good. New. It looks good.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. Okay.
Yeah. And then I couldn't get into the Centurion. It was a 60-minute wait.
Okay.
And then so I just went and grabbed a burger and a beer at a restaurant. And then when I went to my gate and I was sitting waiting to board, I saw probably five or six Southwest flights sitting on one of the ramps, engines running after they landed because they didn't have a gate to go to. There were probably two or three United flights that were waiting for a gate and several Frontier flights that were waiting for a gate. Denver felt like pre-COVID with all this international traffic, with wait times to get into the lounge, with airplanes that couldn't get to gates.
Now, what day was this?
Sunday, which is a pretty busy.
Yeah, that explains part of it.
Yeah, but I've flown like in the last couple of weeks, or I guess month, I've flown home on Sunday evening and never had issues like that or never saw that.
You're going to have those peaks. But I can tell you the load factors are going down precipitously, and we're going to talk about this coming up. All right, Doug, let's move up the coast to your neck of the woods, to SFO. There's some news up there. What's going on?
Yeah, this is from the San Francisco Business Times. United Airlines resumed selling tickets for San Fran nonstop to popular European capital. United Airlines is preparing for a possible recovery in European travel with new and expanded service from San Fran in the months ahead. Paris resumes on December 1st after being discontinued since March 2020. We feel really bullish about Europe for next summer. We had a glimpse of that this summer, said Andrew Nasella, Chief Commercial Officer at United. Tickets are also on sale for San Fran Dublin in 2022. Frankfurt London will go twice daily in early 2022.
Doug, with these routes increasing, Frankfurt and London twice daily, Dublin and Paris coming back, this guy, Andrew Nasella, he basically said what we said on the last episode. He said, we feel really bullish about Europe next summer. So do we. I feel bullish about everything next summer.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have, you know, this is the chief commercial officer who looks at the routes, and he's saying it looks good for next summer.
For next summer.
Positive. That's good to hear. Good to hear the positive news on SFO routes, but let me rain on our parade a little bit. As we were just mentioning, their loads are starting to go down, and I've noticed this. So this is from NPR. As the Delta variant soars, the airline industry descends into another slump. The EU is taking the US off its COVID-19 safe list, but airlines have already been cutting flights due to low booking rates. So that may affect the ease of us traveling to Europe. Hopefully it'll just be temporary. Mm-hmm. So we'll see, Doug. Bookings for August were down 33% compared to August of 2019. And the number of people going through the TSA's airport security checkpoints this week fell to its lowest levels since early May. We were speaking of Dorkfest. Cranky Flyers Brett Snyder, who organizes Dorkfest, notes that while leisure travelers always slow this time of year as kids return to school, what is notable is the Delta variant's effect on prospective business travel. The EU's decision this week to remove the US from its safe travel list and recommend that member nations reinstate travel restrictions on unvaccinated Americans will likely further reduce air travel demand. The CDC says it's safe for those who are fully vaccinated to fly, but the big surge in the Delta variant COVID cases among the unvaccinated is leading to growing calls for the federal government to require shots in arms in order to board a plane. Doug, you and I both know that's not going to happen.
Yeah. I read that Canada has already done that.
Requiring people to be vaccinated to fly. How has that gone?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I just saw that the other day. I didn't have a chance to fully read about that. But yeah, I found that kind of interesting. But like Brett said, we expected that this was going to happen this fall, not necessarily because of the Delta variant. Delta variant probably is taking a little bit more of a hit on the airlines, but we've talked about it several times that with kids in school and things like that, the travel was going to slump, but it's this business travel and that's where the revenue comes from. And that's why it's really important. I think we quoted an article a week or two ago saying that while numbers were up this summer, it was rock bottom fares or relatively low fares.
Rock bottom fares, some pent up demand
to what it normally is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were both finding some really good prices. I was buying a lot of revenue tickets and not non-revenue because the price was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. You couldn't beat it. Like when we, what was it? 149 from Miami to JFK and in flagship business on American.
Flagship business. Right. Mm-hmm. And then coming back from San Francisco, I paid $130 to get to the East Coast. They're not making a lot of money off these airfares, But having said that, I am seeing all over the place that the Delta variant is plateauing. Vaccinations are going to go up, which is going to help. And, you know, on these, I don't, you know, when there's a mandate or an increase in insurance costs for the people that don't get vaccinated, it does make a difference. So I'm hearing that since United Airlines has had this mandate, a lot of people that were not getting vaccinated have gotten it. Mm-hmm. Delta Airlines, I read someplace that since they started that $200 additional charge in their insurance policy, if they're not vaccinated, 4,000 Delta employees have been vaccinated since.
Yeah, which is 20% of their unvaccinated got vaccinated. Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is all before the federal mandate. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the cases go down with you know, the government pushing this stuff for mm-hmm. people to get vaccinated. So
yeah, I was just going to say one last thing that I want to add to this, and we've mentioned this before. Don't look at this as the early to mid 2020 slump. It's not that at all. And the airlines have already, even before the Delta variant, had said most of their staffing, most of their scheduling, everything is looking ahead to summer 2022. Don't expect furloughs or anything this fall. Don't expect cuts. Maybe cuts to flights, but this is not the environment that we were in 18 months ago.
Absolutely.
This is a completely different environment.
It's different. Yeah, it's a slump. It's not a panic situation. I think we were all expecting that with the rise in leisure travel, we would see business travel also, but mm-hmm. this Delta variant is causing a little road bump.
Something else that I think that we mentioned 12, 18 months ago, back when COVID really first started, was why are we using 2019 as the metric? Because 2019 was the best year in US aviation history from a revenue standpoint, from a number of passengers standpoint. Mm. If you go back to 2015, 2016, when airlines were making boatloads of money, record profit margins, et cetera, I think that we might be at or above that from a total passenger standpoint.
Right.
But from, we're looking at from like 2015, 2016,
from a normal,
because 2019 was record setting. I wouldn't call that normal. Yeah. I understand comparing it to 2019, because when you talk about the stock market, you say, where is it compared to its previous record highs? I get that. Yeah. But you also have to look at it saying, this isn't the financial crisis. This isn't post 9/11. We're above where we were then.
Right. Yeah, good point.
So it's just, you know, a thought that I've had for a while is, can we also go back and compare it? But unfortunately, TSA data doesn't go back that far. We can look at revenue. We can look at other things that airlines report. We're even in this little slump, we still are ahead of where we were 5 years ago in the industry with a lot less employees, because so many employees took the early out packages and early retirements and things like that.
Right. Yeah. So everyone, don't think we're going back to like March 2020. It's not as bad.
No, not at all. All right, Drew. Well, we talked about LAX is one of our favorite spotting airports, and you and I have been there 3 or 4 times now on several of our trips. Actually, probably more than that, maybe 5.
What's the point where we went to Myrtle Beach instead of LAX?
Instead of LAX. Sort of
different scenery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also a hub for something else we've been watching, which is sustainable aviation fuels. What better location for this other than environmentally and vegan-friendly California? Aviation Today reports that Chevron, Delta, and Google team up for a sustainable aviation fuel project at LAX. Chevron, Delta Airlines, and Google announced on September 7th that they signed an agreement to test and track sustainable aviation fuel and its emissions at LAX, known as SAF. SAF is created from renewable feedstock, and it's also said to reduce emissions by up to 80% when compared to fossil fuels. SAF has caught the attention of many in the aviation industry because of its drop-in characteristics that allow a blend of SAF and Jet A to be used with no aircraft modifications. In the new effort at LAX, Chevron will be creating a SAF test batch at its El Segundo refinery and selling the product to Delta, who will use it on its fleet at LAX. Amelia DeLuca, Delta's Managing Director of Sustainability, said, on top of being the first carbon-neutral airline on a global basis, we've pledged to replace 10% of our jet fuel with SAF by 2030. This project will track and analyze emissions data from Chevron and Delta with the help of Google, using Google Cloud. Drew, before you go on with your data, I didn't realize Delta has a Director of Sustainability.
I didn't realize that. And I didn't realize that they wanted to be, they had a pledge to be the first carbon neutral airline. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't know that. This is good to hear. It's almost like now we're starting to see airlines competing for this mantle of most environmentally friendly, right? I didn't know Delta had this pledge, but I did know that other airlines were in the news saying, hey, we want to be first. We want to be ahead of the game. JetBlue announced on July 12th that they would buy 1.5 million gallons of SAF. I don't even know if they say SAF, but I think we'll just coin that. Yeah. I don't want to say sustainable aviation fuels every single time.
And we work in aviation. We love acronyms.
Right. We love acronyms. So 1.5 million gallons of SAF from World Energy and World Fuel Services, which would comprise 5% of their fuel purchases at Los Angeles. United Airlines, through its EcoSkies program, has made the airline industry's largest single investment in SAF and has purchased more SAF, also from World Energy at LAX, than any other airline in the world. United Airlines' EcoSkies Alliance program allows corporate customers the opportunity to pay the additional cost for sustainable fuel or SAF. We're going to talk about this in a second, because why would you pay more, right? We'll talk about it in a second.
Yeah.
United Airlines also announced on Thursday a record purchase for 1.5 billion gallons of SAF over 20 years from Alder Fuels under certain conditions starting in 2025. And then it's not just the airlines, Doug, the airports are getting into it. So Los Angeles World Airports, or LAWA, L-A-W-A, is committed to achieving ambitious sustainability goals, including net zero carbon emissions and 100% renewable energy for LAX facilities by 2045, said Justin Urbacci of LAWA.
This is good forward thinking from these airlines, and LAX will help them get ahead of possible federal requirements in the near future, with the White House saying on Thursday they're targeting 20% lower aviation emissions by 2030. It's part of their goal of making the U.S. net carbon neutral by 2050. It comes as United States and Europe are trying to boost production of SAF, which is now made in minuscule quantities from feedstocks such as cooking oil and can be 2 to 5 times more expensive than standard jet fuel. In the short term, the cost of the alternative fuels is likely to hold back their adoption. Before the pandemic scrambled the industry, airlines paid about $2 per gallon for jet fuel. Airlines for America says the alternative fuels can cost as at least 3 times as much. President Biden said he's seeking a SAF tax credit as part of the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill being pushed by congressional Democrats, a move the industry says is necessary to offset the higher cost of production. Did President Biden say SAF, or did he say sustainable aviation fuels?
This is one of these stories which is too boring to make the front page news.
Yeah.
So I happened to find this. I'm like, this is really big.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, sustainable fuels isn't exciting. So we're kind of making it, making it exciting. All right. So now here we go. We've got to rain on the parade because they have all these things, but it's not prevalent yet. The cost, and it's not a significant amount yet. The Guardian in England, I read this article, they pose 6 problems aviation must fix to hit net zero. We're going to lose a lot of our listeners if we go through every single one. So I just pulled out the big ones that I saw, Doug. The fuel itself. Aviation is becoming 3% more efficient every year. And that's with, you know, changing from A380s to 777s I don't know, 747s to 787s. It's becoming more efficient because you get
Maxes and Neos.
Maxes and Neos.
20%.
Yeah, and that's the number we see, right? The new generation is usually 20% more efficient. So 3% more efficient every year. But here's the problem. Traffic is growing at 5% a year. So you're going to have all this efficiency. Your traffic is going to increase where that out, you know, that completely demolishes what gains you've made, you know, what reductions you've made, because you have more planes in the air. SAF will help reduce the emissions, but it's currently only 0.1% of fuel consumption, 0.1%. Fat from cooking oils is cheap, but will only provide about 2% of jet fuel needed in the EU and the US. Biofuels can also be made from crops such as palm, soya, and corn. Now, I kind of thought that this would become a problem because we see this with ethanol, which comes a lot from corn.
From corn.
Environmental groups have been arguing against these for years, because what happens when you use that for aviation fuel, the cost of the crops go up, because now you have a higher demand for the food waste, I guess, or those crops.
Yeah.
And then it also drives deforestation to harvest these.
Yeah. Before we go on, can I just make a comment about this? Please. The percentages, yes, you are right that it is that aviation is growing faster than it's becoming efficient.
Right.
But this is at least a step in the right direction. Remember with COVID, we talked about flattening the curve, right? Mm-hmm. And then you started down on the backside. In a way, we're, even though it's not getting better, we're it's not getting worse, if that makes sense, which is a step in the right direction until we can figure out better ways to do this. And the fact that Delta, United, JetBlue, they're all investing in these different startups and different companies and things, that's a step in the right direction.
Right. And something else I saw, I don't have the story in front of me, but Gevo is a company that makes these SAF fuels. Mm-hmm. So they just signed a partnership with Chevron. So once the oil companies get in the game and they see the dollar signs in their eyes, that's when it's really going to start moving. You know, when it starts, become, we have access to like greater production capabilities with these big companies with a lot of money.
Yeah. Without getting too far into the business side, I think it's going to have to be these oil companies that really move the needle on it.
Because, I agree 100%.
Because if fossil fuels go away completely, so do those companies.
Agreed.
And they're the ones who will lose the most from going to this. And so they're the ones who are incentivized the most to come up with an alternative.
Right. If you can't beat them, join them, because they can see this coming. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a good example of that. Electric cars. They're never going to become mainstream until the big auto manufacturers get on board. And they are.
Yep.
I think GM. Ford is going to be making an F-150 electric.
Yep.
That's just coming out next year. And I think it was GM that says they're going to be all electric by 2030, which is not that far from now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, these big companies are getting on board. Now, here's one more problem. Frequent flyers, which is you and me, we're flying a lot. Mm-hmm. 1% of the world's population emits 50% of the CO2 from aviation. Mm-hmm. So that's us. That's those of us that fly a lot. Rising middle-class populations in China and India will only make that worse, because they're going to become frequent flyers. Once you have a taste of flying, you want to go more and more and more. Now, people are going to hate this. I hate it already. In Europe, they're kind of ahead of the curve on these environmental stuff. And they're thinking, your first flight, you don't pay any extra tax. But if you have multiple flights, you might have to pay a frequent flyer tax because you're emitting more carbon dioxide than someone else.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hard sell. But back to the United.
I can see the airlines pushing back on that.
Oh, absolutely. Because this is our business. You know, that's going to take. I mean, they're asking us to reduce our business. That's never going to happen. I mean, we'll find a way to run it and do it more efficiently. But I want to go back to what United had. Through United's EcoSkies Alliance program, it allows corporate customers the opportunity to pay the additional cost for sustainable fuel. So what corporations could do is say, hey, yeah, our people are flying a lot, but we are contributing to United so that they can buy more sustainable fuel. Mm-hmm. So that's a way of offsetting it and also reducing some of the guilt, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. One more thing. Supersonic. We have these new supersonic things in the
words.
Not too distant future, right? They consume 5 to 7 times as much fuel per passenger than subsonic planes. Mm-hmm. So that's another problem, you know, that we have to think about in terms of sustainability.
Yeah, but think of it this way. Maybe they'll start using 100% biofuels or something like that, because they're still in development right now. Right. Whereas the MAX, the NEO, the 350, the 78, all these planes were designed using 100% normal fossil fuel. So now they're having to figure out, okay, what levels work with the airplane? Whereas new development like Boom might be able to begin using more percentage, if you will, of this sort of biofuel.
And also, Doug, it might not be as difficult as we think, because the Boom is probably going to be flying from LA to Tokyo or from LA to London, both areas which really have a lot of environmentalists and who really care about these targets. Mm-hmm. So maybe those airports will be set up to fuel these planes with 100% SAF. Mm-hmm. I could see that.
By the time this episode airs, you'll be back from Dorkfest at Los Angeles. What's your routing, or do you want to wait and talk about it?
Could be flying 3 airlines on this trip. So we'll be flying with Nate and Greg tomorrow. I'm going from the DC area to Newark. And I could drive there in about 3.5 to 4 hours. But why? When I could fly there in 8 hours.
Yep.
I'm going from DCA to Charlotte, but why go nonstop to Charlotte? Mm-hmm. So American has one that I can stop in Raleigh-Durham, and I've never seen Raleigh-Durham Airport.
It's a nice airport.
It is. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So I'll be changing planes in Raleigh-Durham, going to Charlotte, meeting the guys, Charlotte to Newark. We have a mission of visiting the Freedom Tower in New York.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if the memorial is open. I'm hearing that it's closed after 5 o'clock, but I'm sure we can at least walk up close to it. So, so we'll see. Spend the night, and then we fly a 787-10 from Newark to Los Angeles. So the guys are really excited about that. Greg has never been on a 787.
And you upgraded, right?
And we upgraded. The fares were really good. So there's, I mean, you could not. I basically told the guys, we are upgrading.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I know what the prices are, and we bought these tickets a long time ago.
Yeah.
Now that flight is full. Good thing we did.
Yeah. You guys are in premium, right? Premium economy.
Yeah. Premium economy. LAX. So we'll stay at the H Hotel, and then we'll meet the rest of the dorks at the Dork Fest at on the mound there near the In-N-Out Burger. And then Nate and I come back. We go from Wi-Fi nonstop from Los Angeles to New York. So we're going from LA to San Francisco, San Francisco to Kennedy, and then I'll fly back on Delta from Kennedy to DCA. So I got all three airlines. Really excited. Doug Tyler, who's one of the people, one of our friends that's going to be on this trip, he mentioned, he asked, like, what do we think is a better spotting airport? Is it Los Angeles or JFK? So we put this question to our listeners. Let's see what our listeners say, and let's discuss how we feel.
Well, first of all, you're going to be spotting at both because you're staying at the TWA hotel.
Yeah.
And you're going to be spotting in LA. I don't think we're surprised by the results that we got, but let's save our comments for later. This is how the listeners voted. 86.7% said LAX, while only 13.3% said JFK. Reggie said LAX because between the two, that's the only one I've been to. Also, Nectar Air, Tahiti Nui, Nectar Air.
I don't know. I think that might be a typo.
Yeah. Tahiti Nui serves LAX. Enough said. I agree with Reggie. Tahiti Nui is a beautiful livery.
It really is. Yeah. Our buddy Greg said, I'm going to Los Angeles since I've actually spotted there. But I've got to think there's more variety at Los Angeles with Euro and Asian airlines, where JFK is mostly Euro and Middle Eastern airlines. I'll save my comments. Mm-hmm.
And then Girardi Aviation Photography, our buddy Joey said LAX, they have a bit more variety. Plus, the locations at JFK aren't that great.
All right. Our friend Nolan said more airline variation at LAX, I think. Cargo airlines, too, which we just talked about. Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel said, I can only speak of LAX as I've not been to JFK to spot. You can't beat Imperial Hill or the H for locations, the H Hotel for locations.
And then Sean, he said, I'm JFK based. Los Angeles is the answer. Not even close. He's from JFK. JFK sucks to spot. Inconvenient locations and runway switches can mean driving 30 minutes between spots. Great traffic, though. Doug, I think unless you have a $200 room at the TWA hotel and you're at the pool with a cocktail, I don't know where there are spotting locations at JFK.
Yeah. I've seen pictures from the, what is the name of it? There's a beach just south of the airport.
Rockaway Beach?
Rockaway Beach, where you see the European traffic banking really low out over the beach as they head to the east and then further on to the north.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I mean, if you get a runway switch, then you don't have anything. Right. And I feel like you can't beat 75, 80 degrees, palm trees, sunny skies,
cheeseburgers.
But but the great thing about LA, someone mentioned Imperial Hill. Mm-hmm. You've got the In-N-Out, the park by the In-N-Out. You've got that little embankment that we went up last fall down
that
the road.
Right.
Yeah. Down the road from In-N-Out. You've got the H rooftop. You've got the Proud Bird. You can go back and forth between all the different runways. It's all walkable. You don't need a car. It's not like JFK. It's not like when I spotted with Nate at Dallas 18 months ago, where we had to drive 15, 20 minutes to get from one runway to the other.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of stuff to see. And I know that it happens sometimes where they're landing over the ocean, but it seems like they're always landing going
to the west.
Mm-hmm. To the west. So that means you get the great approach views.
Yeah.
And in terms of mix between Asia and Europe, let's talk about pre-COVID, right? It was almost even European and Asian carriers, maybe a little bit more Asian, but that's a West Coast city with all this European traffic. So you weren't at a loss for traffic from any part of the world. Yeah. The only thing is like not a lot of South American wide bodies. You have to go to Miami for that or Kennedy.
Yeah. Greg said more European and Middle Eastern in JFK. They get a lot of Asian carriers too, though. And LAX also gets the Middle Eastern carriers.
That's true. Yeah. They get all, I think LAX gets all the Middle Eastern, the big four, right? I'm pretty sure they do.
Yeah. Or Etihad, maybe not right now because of COVID, but yeah, they did at least.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to it. And looking at the weather forecast, you said you were going to be in the 80s. Mm-hmm. LA is going to be very similar. It shows that it's going to be clear skies, so it's going to be great weather. How are we doing with the fires? Are you seeing any smoke still?
Very little. Okay. It's not going to be like last year, which is awesome.
Yeah, for the listeners, we went last year, and that's when we all met. I mean, you and I met our three new friends, Nate, Greg, and Tyler. We had a great time just because it's more about people than planes, right? That's what we keep saying. But the visibility was horrible. Brown skies, so every picture had a tinge of brown.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty bad, but it was fun. Yeah. Well, to everyone who's going to be there, I really hope you guys have fun. Sorry I can't make it this year, but like I said, I'll be watching all the Asian traffic heading down your way.
Right. And as soon as Doug racks up some points at home from being away so long, we can start racking up some trips later in the year in 2022.
Speaking of trips, Drew, this is the first time in years, maybe. I don't know. I do not have a single flight booked.
How do you feel?
Terrible.
Terrible. Yeah. I would think that it's a nice break to like
it
clear your mind.
Okay. It is a great break, but in previous breaks like this, at least I have something like 2 to 3 months out. You know what I mean? Okay. It's like, hey, we're going to go on a family vacation in 3 months and we already have the flights booked. There is zero on the docket.
I want everyone to listen to what Doug is saying.
For what I'm
want everyone to listen to what Doug is saying right now and just make a mental note, because I've said this before, I am not a spotter. I'm going mostly to be with friends. And yeah, of course, there's A380 landing. I'm going to go out and look. I work at the airport. There's no need to spot. I see them every day, all day long. Doug is going to be at the airport flying as his job almost every waking hour. So I think you're going to be okay with like a week of, you know, several months from now, you're going to be fine with just doing nothing.
Rest and recuperation.
Yeah. Not seeing a plane for a week. I think you're going to be just fine with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to figure out how I can, I was doing it like a practice packing the other day about how I can get my nice camera in my crew bag so that if I have downtime somewhere.
No. Why don't you just buy the new Apple iPhone? These new phones do just about as much, unless
they
don't zoom.
They don't zoom though. That's the problem. Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, you guys have that known crew checkpoint where you can have like four bags, like you're going on a 2 week vacation, but you're just going, you know, for a weekend. I have no idea what you crew members have in those bags. You probably have your like food for a week or something.
I saw in a pilot Facebook group the other day, someone was trying to sell their lunchbox because they accidentally ordered two on Amazon. It looks like a tackle box, like a fishing tackle box. Like they were going to catch swordfish on a 2 week Atlantic adventure. The tackle box or the, not the tack, the lunchbox was like the size of their rollerboard suitcase. It's like, what are you putting in there?
You know what? That might be you, because you might find that, you know, when you're traveling, the food is so unhealthy.
It is.
You just start bringing all your own food.
It absolutely is. That's why it is really nice being home right now, because I'm eating scrambled eggs and boiled eggs and sauteed chicken. Yeah. And that's it. I'm not eating burgers and fries. And even when you try and eat healthy on the road, it's just so difficult.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah.
To our listeners, the podcast is your show. So go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Tell your friends about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. that will help other listeners like you discover this show.
Drew, it's good to hear the positive news on San Francisco routes, but let me rain on the parade a little bit.
Okay, what do you have? Oh, that's me.
Oh, that's you. Supposed to say. Sorry.
That's okay. Sorry. All right, so we'll finish. So